Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
You know, I pick up the phone and it's like, all right, well, hopefully he's not too busy, you know, thinking it's going to be a 5-minute conversation. You look up and it's like, I've just been talking to him for an hour. I really care about Will. And I think we're going to have so many people that are going to want Will to do well as well. And I think that's really important, both players and staff and front office. I think he's the right guy.
White Sox GM Chris Getz joined me on the White Sox Recap podcast this week. A lengthy sit down, had so much to say, really good insight on the organization. Obviously, new manager Will Venable as well. You can find that on YouTube and wherever you subscribe and find your podcasts. And it's time to go back out to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, and that's where we find Bruce, the new manager of your Chicago White Sox, Will Venable.
Will Venable joins us on Inside the Clubhouse. Will, thanks for taking some time out on a Saturday morning to join us. I imagine you're starting to get the antsy feeling of being ready for spring training. How are you handling that?
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me. Doing great. I don't know if antsy is the word. There's just so much to do, you know, really been focused on getting stuff done, getting stuff set up. So, just grinding on making it happen and getting prepared.
Well, and talking to Chris this week, you know, he went back to the actual process of interviewing you. And when I sat down with you a couple of months ago, you talked about needing that extra year in Texas with Boach before you felt like you were truly ready to take the job. And Chris needed 1 year on the job to kind of start to implement the things he wanted to do rather than just being able to say, hey, trust me, I'm going to do this. He's actually put things in place that he wanted to do prior to hiring you. How have you been both able to, like, you needed that extra year in Texas. He needed the year on the job to kind of let this marriage come together in 2025.
Yeah, I think that the timing for that was really, really right. And to your point, you know, for him to get going and start the momentum and get things going in the direction that he really wanted to, and kind of fill in some of those gaps that he knew that he wanted to address, really made sense as far as, you know, my onboarding and understanding of what he was trying to do, what he was trying to accomplish, seeing the things that he had put into action. And so to us to be able to get together now and move this thing forward, I think it was really critical that he did have that year to get things going, show me the way, and now we work together to push it forward.
Well, when I say success, what will success look like for you and the Chicago White Sox in 2025?
You know, I think it'll look a lot of different ways. You know, certainly wins and losses matter. You know, that's the ultimate gauge of our success. And it will matter what our record is, and certainly showing progress towards continuing to build and grow. We also have a lot of things that we're working on internally as far as, developing our infrastructure and our internal systems and the way that we communicate and use information. And ultimately, all those things are put in place to make your players better. So, our players performing at their best is going to be another critical measure of our success.
You could have had an opportunity to go elsewhere, right? Like, you could have waited for your first managerial job to be a team that is not coming off the worst record in the history of the game. Instead, you embraced this opportunity and saw an opportunity to come out of it and be the guy to lead that for your first managerial experience. Why and what was it about the White Sox that said, forget what I see in front of me, which is 41 and 121. This is the opportunity and this is the time with this team.
Yeah, I think on the front end, you know, obviously, you know, to take the interview and to consider that, and you, you know, you have these interviews and you go through this exercise with your family and you envision yourself there and what that might mean. And certainly as we did that and we thought about the reputation of Chris and what we know about the team there a little bit, that was enough to walk in the building and take the interview. And then it was really about understanding the people, understanding the vision. And ultimately, I think, you know, seeing Chris's progress, his plan, but also getting connected with some of the people and realizing that these people are my kind of people and, you know, baseball people who have developed a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, who are going at this thing and have a little bit of that underdog mentality to go out there and prove everybody wrong and just get better and compete and win and be part of that process. So, for me, that's what it was about, kind of all those things combined, and really excited that it ended up being the person that they chose.
When you worked with a Joe Maddon or Bruce Bochy, how often would you take the opportunity to ask why you did something at a certain moment, or were those things, you know, eventually made clear to you by their style and the personnel that they had? I mean, you can only manage the people that you have on a team, can't manage everybody the same way. What did you learn from handling people from some of these great World Series iconic managers that you take with you now?
So much stuff, and it comes in different forms. You know, certainly there's just observing and watching how you know, these guys and the last couple of years with Bochy, just watching him operate, watching him communicate with players when he decided to address the team or not, or a certain player, or, you know, develop the messaging or change the line, whatever it might be, just observing. There's obviously a ton of information to take in. But also, Bochy is just so inclusive. I mean, it was, you know, just walk into the office and ask a question. Hey, man, you know, yesterday, you know, you made this move. I was thinking something else, or I hadn't thought about that. You know, what was the mindset behind that? And he was, you know, more than happy to give me his insight. So it was every day. It was nonstop, and just feel really lucky that I was, you know, had that time around Bochy and all the great managers that have been around.
How consistent was he during a World Series championship and a hugely disappointing year last year? And what do you take from that, your experience as a player, coach, and, you know, an assistant manager like you were last year in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, he understands the importance of consistency, and, you know, that's just in his DNA. He, you know, he's a competitor. He wants to win. Obviously, last year was not a great year, and expectations weren't met, but he was the same guy every day, and that was, you know, someone who came to the field, was competitive, and you know, did all the things that are important to him from a leadership standpoint. So really impressive. Again, I could talk about Bochy all day, but, you know, just impressive the consistency on a great year and then a not so great year for him to come to the ballpark and be who he was on a daily basis. Really, really meant a lot for our group there in Texas.
We had Walker McKinven on a couple of weeks ago here on the show, and obviously a very impressive guy, and look forward to, you know, meeting him and his time here in Chicago. A lot of times, you know, managers in your spot that are doing the job for the first time will hire a bench coach that's maybe a former manager or has a lot of experience in the game or is older and has seen a lot of different things. What about Walker made him an attractive candidate to be kind of your right-hand man as a manager?
I think a lot of things. And one, I think just the reputation of the person, what you heard about him, he was someone that was an extremely attractive candidate from the get-go. And then as you talk to him and you start to think about, you know, certainly, yes, there's things that I need as a first-year manager, but there's also things that this organization needs. And his ability to come in and help us evaluate things, help us build things, and really help grow our foundation. We thought that he was just a perfect candidate, and he has been that and more these last couple of weeks. He's been amazing. Just a really, really bright person who understands baseball, understands players, and you know, we're really confident it's going to help us push forward here.
Colin Montgomery is supposed to be given an opportunity to be your starting shortstop. You'll ultimately make that decision. What do you have to see from Montgomery to feel comfortable that you can have a 22-year-old rookie playing shortstop for your team going into the season? And how much patience can you have for a young player at that very crucial position?
So, you know, really for a lot of these guys, I mean, I've seen a few of them play. These guys who have been in the big leagues the last couple of years, I've seen them play here and there. But really it's going to be the opportunity for me to get eyes on all these guys and evaluate their performance and see how we all fit together. And in Colson's case, you know, I've seen video, but I haven't really got the chance to see him play. But, you know, we'll expect all our players to go out there and be able to compete and, you know, put together quality bats, control the zone, you know, be responsible and aggressive base runner, and then go out there and execute plays on defense. So, you know, what that means specifically for Colson, you know, we'll find out, but really excited to see him and the rest of the guys here in a few weeks.
All right, so you've had this job roughly 3 months, albeit the off season, but what's one thing now that you've been on the job that has, I'm not going to say surprised you, but how about something that's impressed you, whether it's about the White Sox, about some of the things you're learning, you know, whether it's media responsibilities, et cetera, but what's one thing that's kind of jumped out at you here in the first 3 months?
Just the people, I think. I think you forget also, even though I've obviously been in other organizations, just how many people there are. And what I think has been really impressive about this group is that, you know, there's a lot of people, but the communication is just elite. You know, it's been really, really good. And I've been, you know, really taken back by that in a good way, obviously, that, you know, I'm excited that this organization has already have, you know, developed this foundation of really, really good communication, you know, among the staff and the support staff. So that's something that stuck out. But, you know, just a lot of really good people, a lot of really bright people that I know are going to help contribute to our future.
When it comes to metrics, where is Will Venable at as far as applying all that is available to him before a game and using during a game, up until this latest general manager taking over, there was a assumption that the White Sox were behind many of the teams in Major League Baseball as far as using metrics and how it might help you on a daily game basis and generally all around.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll have you know, a dependency on metrics at an appropriate level. I think that changes with each decision that you're making. I think broadly for us, you know, and having information is one thing, and the way that you utilize it is another thing. And so you work hard on both ends to make sure you're doing things right. And I know that right now our guys are working really hard to make sure that we have all the information that we need to you know, set up lineups, to acquire players, to navigate a game and make decisions. So as we're building on that side, also that we know we'll be confronted with it as games start and we start training and doing all these other things on the field. So for me, you know, as we're looking at, you know, on my end, as far as, you know, helping guys get better and putting them in positions to succeed, you know, I really like using kind of an objective foundation and saying, okay, like, what's the information telling us? And then using our eyes, using our understanding of the players and their psychology and doing what's best for the player and what's best for the team. So we know that balance looks different from day to day, from player to player, from situation to situation. But for me, certainly, you know, a thoughtful balance of objectivity and, you know, the human components is kind of how I approach decision making.
You have a unique situation. You have a boatload of guys that will be either making their major league debuts or they're going to have, you know, a cup of coffee in the big leagues thus far. And then you have guys like Andrew Benintendi and Andrew Vaughn and Luis Robert, who have been around the block for a while, are veterans on a team that's in a rebuild. But a guy like Andrew Vaughn, like, with your experience, you're a guy that these guys watched as a player. Like, they can, like, Google you pretty quickly, find your baseball reference card and be like, oh yeah, like, here are the guy, I remember this, and he was on this organization and this playoff run, et cetera, et cetera. How is your being a former player and now bringing that to the manager's chair? And maybe a guy like Andrew Vaughn, who was a Golden Spikes winner, you know, kind of rushed to the big leagues. He was kind of here during the COVID situation, maybe hasn't reached his full potential yet. How are you able to, as a former player and a first-year manager, kind of go to a guy like Andrew Vaughn and maybe find something more, give him a different message that could relate to a guy that is looking for that 30-100 breakout type season?
I think with all the players, you know, it's really about just connecting with them and learning them. You know, I wouldn't go into a relationship with Andrew Vaughn or any other player saying, okay, like, this is what I'm going to do to unlock this guy.
Sure.
You know, it's really just about getting to know them. You know, I've had an initial wave of kind of introductory phone calls and messages and talk to guys. And, you know, as January continues, we'll move into the phase where we'll talk about some of these things about, hey, you know, what do you envision in spring training that you need? You know, what are you thinking, you know, we can do to support you having the best year that you can have, and getting under the hood on some of that stuff and seeing how we can support these guys and seeing if we can give them what they need to be at their best. So that's how I'm approaching it. You know, I think that's a long process. You have to build these relationships. You have to build trust and ultimately, you know, provide them what they need. And some of that is support and love, and some of that is accountability at the same time too.
So many times, and it's not easy to observe, Will, but so many times it appears that some teams are not ready to start a game when the game starts. Is there a trick or a method in mind that you have as to having your team at their most readiness to start a baseball game, whether it's doing infield two or three times a week, you know, cutting meetings closer to the beginning of the start of the game or further away? What is the methodology that you've seen that works when it comes to teams being ready when a game starts?
That's a really good question, Bruce. And I think that there's a lot that goes into that. And ultimately, you know, as I'm considering, you know, our program and how we set up our day in spring training and then going into the year, it's all geared towards that, right? Being ready for the first pitch. And that means activating your mind and your mentality, your skill set, knowing your opponent, knowing yourself, knowing what this game is going to ask you to do, knowing the ballpark. And so that's what we're going to do in spring training, is we're going to go about our process for learning those things, for knowing those things, and making sure that they're calibrated to the highest level, that we have our program calibrated to execute at the highest level at game time. Right. And that's what we'll be doing in spring training. And that will be everything that it's geared towards.
And as part of that, you know, I think one thing about the White Sox, just speaking, you know, maybe for the fans here, is that the style of play is not something that people have been proud of either. You know, whether it's first to third, you know, clean throws to first, hitting the cutoff man, stuff like that. The style of play has also led to, you know, catastrophic losses. But how much does that impact your messaging too? Because if you lose 4-2, but it was a really clean baseball game and you guys did things the right way and you did those things I mentioned, that doesn't taste as bad as losing 4-2 because of a missed cutoff man in the seventh inning and, you know, getting caught in a rundown. So is that part of the messaging when you're putting this whole plan together?
For sure. And we know that you know, the expectations for preparation and effort, you know, across this whole league, you know, before managers even say anything, are really high. And we know that we'll have guys who will have to step up and be prepared. I think in the case of a play like that and what you're talking about, you know, one, we want to do our best to support these guys and make sure that we are training at a level that prepares them for those moments. And we know that they're going to happen. We know that we're not going to execute every play and that we're not going to be great every single moment of every game. And what the important thing for me is that when those things do go wrong, like, are we evaluating those plays in the right way? And are we extracting value from those mistakes so we can go ahead and be better next time? And going back to spring training, you know, we're going to set up systems for that, right? Like how we go about our game planning going into the game, and then how we review the plays that we've made and our performance in the game. And for me, that's really, you know, a critical kind of part of the development loop is how we review and kind of be honest with ourselves and our performance. So Yes, really high expectations for execution, but high levels of support for the mistakes we made also.
All right, so we all know you took this job because of the restaurants in Chicago, so it's okay to just get that out there now. But that's the big reason. But you have one meal. You can only go to one spot before all the restaurants close in this city. You got one to go to. Where is it? And that's not discrediting, by the way, not discrediting all of the other great spots or some of your favorites, but you have one meal. Where are you going?
Yeah, I'm probably doing like a Lou Malnati's pizza. Probably,
deep dish or thin?
Yeah. Probably thin.
Okay.
Yeah. But not opposed to the deep dish. Just if I had one, that Lou Malnati's thin crust, pretty good.
All right. So Bruce is offering to pick up your first Lou Malnati's thin crust. Bruce, that's really nice.
Absolutely.
Of you. That's really nice of you, Bruce.
Yeah. Well.
Thanks. Yeah.
You know, it's
might
hard
be
to
different if I said maple and ash.
See what you missed out on.
Well, we appreciate your time so much.
Yeah.
Look forward to Sox Fest. What most are you looking forward to with Sox Fest coming up in a couple weeks to be able to interact with White Sox Nation?
Yeah, the players, the fans, everybody. You know, obviously it's an exciting time. You know, it's just a great opportunity for us to get together and you know, start the year of the baseball season and connect a little bit. So really looking forward to coming out.
All right. Well, I already know how you feel about the media. You told us at the winter meetings, but thank you. Thank you so much. Look forward to working with you every day during spring training in the year. It's going to be fun. And I know you're looking forward to it as well. See you in a couple weeks.
Yep.
Thanks again for joining us today.
Appreciate it, Will.
All right. Thanks, guys. Take care.
New manager of the White Sox, Will Venable, here on Inside the Clubhouse. Are you a local business owner or employee? How would you like to have your commercial air during Super Bowl 59 right here on The Score? This is your chance. We've brought back the Score Big for Your Business contest, where you can enter to win a 30-second Super Bowl commercial on The Score's broadcast of Super Bowl 59 from Westwood One. Log on to 670thescore.com/contest to enter now and learn more details. Deadline to enter is January 19th. We play Chicago Bound on the other side of the break. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. This is 670 The Score.
I'm going to tell you something that you all should know. Chicago is the greatest place I ever know. I'm going to stay in this town. I'm going to live in this town. I'm going to live in Chicago. It's the greatest place around.
The Cubs and Sox are off for the winter, but Inside the Clubhouse starts the hot stove discussion now. Inside the Clubhouse takes a look at which free agents and trades the Cubs and Sox should explore. Will they trade for a top pitcher or player? Is free agency the way the North and South Siders go? You help them make the call. 312-644-6767.
Olsen left field, Profar coming in, he's there, Olsen is done, and the Braves will need two. Scott gets the job done against one of the better hitters in the game, Matt Olsen.
Back on Inside the Clubhouse, Ryan McGuffey and Bruce Levine, time for one of our favorite off-season game shows. Chicago Bound, that audio compliments of Fox, Tanner Scott, maybe the best reliever left on the market here. Bruce, I think we can make that argument. What he would do to the Chicago Cubs bullpen, my friend. We talked about those 26 blown saves. You heard Ron Coomer earlier say that he thinks the Cubs certainly are going to be in the market still to add somebody that needs to solidify that back end of the bullpen. And certainly last year, I think they had 13 blown saves just in the ninth inning. Tanner Scott would change a lot of things.
So I'm going to dice this up by telling you that the Cubs have had discussions with Scott.
Okay.
That the Scott people want 4 years at somewhere between $17-18 million a year. Okay, right now. If Ryan McGuffey was the general manager of the Cubs, how hard would you be pushing to say, yeah, we'll give you $17 million a year, but it's not going to be for four. It's going to be for three. Okay. Or we're going to give you 3 years and an option. Okay. We're not going for, and again, I say this with no knowledge of the fact that they would do this other than the fact that the Cubs and general manager and president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, now Carter Hawkins, the general manager, have eschewed giving out long-term contracts to bullpen guys throughout their careers, you know. And no one's saying it's right or wrong. It's just, you know, they have really not wanting to give more than 2 or 3 years to a closer because, you know, there's just too much that happens to these guys. And then you're stuck with, you know, a big chunk of money and you're not getting production for it at the end of the game. How would you go about this to make sure that you get one of the more dominant guys in the game at the end and kind of change the whole look of your bullpen by doing it?
Well, I would tell you this. Let's say they had 16 blown saves last year, okay? They're a 93-win team. So I would tell you that my biggest need or maybe my biggest hole on this team going into 2025 with a division that's screaming, win me. I need Tanner Scott, and in 4 years is definitely going to get it done, or 3 years with an option. He's shopping that to the Dodgers, shopping that to the Mets. I think the Cubs have the biggest need in that spot. I think everybody else is playing from riches, right? The rich are getting rich. Okay, fine. No one else is going to give you that. Here, we'll dip into our $350 million TV deal and give you what you need, especially the Dodgers, who know after seeing him in San Diego. Look, if you only want to give 2 year deals or 3 year deals to a closer, then you won't have a shutdown. You'll have a guy that ranks, you know, 10 to 12. That's fine. But at some point, you got to change your philosophy if you keep coming back and having the same problem, right? The definition of insanity is when you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Well, it's not like they haven't won. It's not like they haven't had good teams. It's not like they didn't go out and get Chapman and they went out and got Kimbrell.
Now we're talking about 16. Right. Yeah. And they had Kimbrell, who did bounce back extremely well, right, and was good for them in that. But it's not like they've gone out there and committed. They've had this problem year in, year out.
But again, you know, you put down the idea of what insanity is, the definition of insanity.
Yeah.
You know, how many of these long contracts for closers work out?
I understand that.
Right? So are you just throwing away an extra $17 or $34 million to get an optimum amount for the first 2 years? Is that something that you want to do as far as your payroll goes? Or do you say, you know what? We have this money. You know, the hell with it. We have to go and get this. It's going to change the whole dynamic of our bullpen. And in reality, as you put it, it might make the difference in 5 to 7 games at the end of the year.
What do you think gives GMs and owners heartburn and high pulse rates the most?
Fans that don't understand their agenda.
Do you really think that? I think it's watching their team blow a winnable game in the ninth inning.
It's media people who have too much information.
People, anybody named Levine.
I'm not... Certainly not the only one out there that really works as hard, just like you do, and so many hardworking reporters that we work with on a daily basis. But the reality is that Scott is at the top of his game right now. He really is ascending, and it's not like you can predict that he's going to be healthy. You can't project. Oh, okay, his arm's hurting him. He's only throwing 94 now. He's getting hit around. He's not closing games. Some of it is blind faith based on the guy's previous performance. And there's a lot of money at stake. So that's where it's at. But I think they've been working hard at this, trying to get this done. And hopefully they'll come up with a guy to really put an exclamation point on going into spring training and what they want to do this season.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know Tanner Scott, you haven't seen him pitch in the NL Central, haven't seen him really pitch at all. He started his career in Baltimore, but really kind of found himself and found his success with the Miami Marlins starting in 2022. And then the last couple of years has just been a stud. WARs of 3.6. He had a 4 WAR this past year. He was traded to the Padres. He had an ERA combined in 72 appearances of 1.75 He was 1-1-8 in 44 games with the Miami Marlins. He's got 55 career saves. It wasn't a role that he took on until the last couple of years. He was an all-star this past season. So he's looking to capitalize, and he's looking at the – he's a lefty, which, right, like how many wipeout lefties are there? Josh Hader,
right?
Aroldis Chapman was that guy in the past.
Yates.
He's still going. Yates.
Yeah.
He's looking at the deal last year the Houston Astros gave Josh Hader. He's not getting Hader money, but he may get the AAV. Hader signed his deal almost a year to the day. So he's January 19th of 2024. Josh Hader signed 5 years, $95 million with the Houston Astros. Was good for them, got them to the playoffs. I think the Astros would love a scenario where they can get out from underneath that a little bit.
Why?
But that's what I say. Okay. Why? But TV money, the same stuff that we're talking about in right. Chicago, Houston's dealing with there. You know, I think they maybe would have liked to allocate that money towards a Kyle Tucker extension. Once they realized they couldn't, they had to keep Josh Hader.
I mean, and these are the things, as you just pointed out, that occur that general managers and presidents of baseball operations try to avoid when they're looking to project not only this year's roster, but 2026, 27, 28. Fans don't care about that. They don't. You know, it's just like, oh, you know, no fan or media person is going to say, yeah, you know, they're trying to make sure that 26 and 27, they have enough money in their budget. None of us care about that.
No.
But we must point it out because it's a reality.
Especially with a possible labor strike coming. Yeah, and I know, again, that's something that people aren't concerned about right now. But when you're an owner trying to line up your finances, it is top of mind. As Bruce said earlier in the show, our job is to report the facts. Those are facts. Those are things that owners who are giving Jed Hoyer, you know, everyone's out there, Jed's not doing anything. Why isn't Jed? Maybe Jed's been told a number. That's the number he's got to hit. He's going to hit it. He's going to add the pieces and hit that number. But if it's not 250, like a lot of people want it to be, and it's 210, that's what he's going to spend, Bruce. He's going to spend 210 and leave a little bit open there for July in the trade deadline for the Cubs to make a move. And you just look at this right now. I mean, what the flip side of that is me saying, damn, the Cubs, like, I think that they could be just a lights-out closer away from being the runaway favorites in this division.
But so you sign Scott, you sign Sasaki, and you trade Tyone.
Okay. I'm attracted.
Okay. I mean, these are – I'm not looking to trade away Jameson Tyone, but, you know, his name certainly came up at the deadline in July. He's a nice pitcher, but, you know, they've added some depth here.
You're replacing him with Roky Sasaki, by the way, in your scenario.
And you're also, you know, added depth along the way, like they've stealthily done here, you know, with these little signings and trades like Ray, you know. They are adding depth. And, you know, Hoyer has talked about this ad nauseum the last few years of pitching, and more pitching.
And here's the thing. Let me just give you, like, I'll paint you another picture about kind of, so USA Today earlier this week, actually yesterday, put an article of the top 11 best relievers left on the market. Obviously, Tanner Scott is the runaway number one. You start going down the list here, Bruce. Carlos Estevez, 32 years old. Hoffman of the 33 years old. Kirby Yates, attractive, 38 years old. You talk about bullpen volatility here. I'm not saying that Kirby Yates doesn't have it. He had an all-star season. Saved 33 games. He certainly isn't more on that 1 to 2 year.
Yeah, you're not going 4 years there.
No, he's more on that 1 to 2 year, probably a 2 year type deal. Spencer Turnbull, failed starter. AJ Minter. Kenley Jansen. We talked about him off the air. Kenley Jansen could be a guy, another 1 to 2
year. He had a good year last year.
37 years old. David Robertson. He's been here both sides. 39 years old. Tommy Canley. I've heard the Cubs are connected to Tommy Canley, former White Sox. I don't feel comfortable giving him the ball in the ninth. I think he's more of like a seventh or eighth guy. Buck Farmer, who's 34, and Columba, 35 years old from the Baltimore. I mean, when you talk about that being the top 11 of the relief core market, Tanner Scott's 4 for 70 doesn't seem all that crazy to me anymore.
No, 4 for 17, you said. Yeah, that's
four
right.
4 for 68. Yeah, 4 for 68. Yep.
Again, you know, it's how far can you go? And when we're thinking, when I try to think like Jed Hoyer, I look at shifting, you know, you have a payroll, it's $230 million. How am I shifting it around so that I'm a stronger, better team and I still have flexibility throughout the season to add on when I need to add on in July? Because you're going into the season thinking you're going to be in the playoffs. You're not thinking anything else.
No.
And you know you're going to need to add at the deadline. Are you going to have the flexibility not to go over to the point where, you know, you went over last year and all of a sudden you're paying 50 cents and a dollar as far as the penalty goes? These are the realities of being a baseball front office person. Not fun, maybe not fun to talk about that much here, but certainly reality when you're looking at these situations.
And you, so Spotrac has, now I don't know exactly how up to the second this is, but it looks pretty accurate, okay, including Kyle Tucker, which right now they have him at 16.25, which gets him at that kind of settled number that you're talking about. And then a couple of guys on the 40-man, there are a bunch of them are making, you know, $800,000. They have the Cubs at 13th overall right now with projected total allocations at 168.5. That number is going to balloon up. We know that. So maybe, like, if I'm using that number, and I don't think it's 100% accurate here, but if I'm using that number, I've got room, Bruce.
You got room, but your additions are not going to – ideally, your additions will come through free agency and trade.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
But, you know,
maybe some subtractions, too, by the way.
Again, you know, tie owner. Is Matt Shaw really your third baseman, or are you looking out there for a third baseman?
I'm looking for a 1-year veteran guy. Like, I mean, laugh at me here when I say, like, a guy like a Paul DeJong type, just a guy that can play the position and be a veteran and good for that core.
Right. Again, so many moving parts, and it's so interesting to watch right now. And again, when people say, well, you know, Hoyer and Hawkins are in their last year of their contracts, I don't think that means a darn thing for them. I really don't. I think these guys are professional baseball men that just want to win.
That's
okay?
Yeah.
And they are going to pay attention to the future of the franchise and the money, regardless of whether they're going to be there or not. They're not going to make moves that just make sense for them to retain their jobs. It's not going to happen.
Right now, the Cubs are on the hook in 2026 for almost $140 million, and that's only 9 players, Bruce. So to your point, think about that. 9 players at a 140, you got to fill out a 40-man, okay?
Right.
So the shifting and the maneuvering starts. That's what, like, when people don't care about 2026 and it's only about 25 – you can jump ahead here and start looking at the allocations in those two seasons and see why the Cubs could be hamstrung. They're at $65 million in 2027 with just 4 players. So, you know, Dansby Swanson, everyone loved it at the time, but that commitment was 28, 28, 28, 27. Okay? So you can't have it both ways a lot of times. You pay to play. You pay the back end of that too. But I still, at the end of the day, I'm going to argue – the Tanner Scott would look pretty damn good in the back end.
I don't think anyone's, including the people with the Cubs, would argue with you.
No.
But for how long?
Fair. And that takes that would take him well into 2027 and beyond. On the other side of the break, Bruce and I are going to preview what we expect or what's to come at next week's Cubs convention. We will be there. Next week's show will be live from Cubs convention. We'll be 9 to noon, an extra hour. Bruce and I will be joined by our old friend David Haw. And we'll have plenty of Cubs guests throughout. We're going to talk about that on the other side of the break. He's Bruce Levine. I'm Ryan McGuffey. It's Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score.
Sammy hits a high fly ball, deep right center. Back goes Merced to the wall and right, looking up, leaping. That ball is gone for a home run. Sammy Sosa has hit one into the basket. Just to the right of the 368 sign, he's carrying an American flag around the bases, and the Cubs lead 1-0.
Well, if there's anything I'm jacked up about next week, it's that guy being in the house at the Sheridan. As the Cubs welcome back Sammy Sosa, he'll be at Cubs convention. I can only imagine the reception, Bruce, when Sammy's unveiled and announced on Friday.
I hope he comes in waving the flag again.
Oh, I want that to happen at Wrigley Field.
Maybe just the Cub flag.
That's fine. The W flag. How about that? There awesome. It is. You're awesome. Welcome, Cubs. There you go. There's Crane. Make sure you don't have to give me the credit for that.
That would the house would come down.
That he should do that. And I also think that's how
you know
what?
Other than Ernie Banks, Sammy is the one to do that.
I agree.
Right. And otherwise, bad form.
Yeah. Bad form. Not, yeah. It's going to feel, it's like, oh, I want to cheer, but why is he doing that?
I mean, you know, you could always say Ryan Sandberg and Dawson and Fergie and yeah. Billy Williams, of course.
But Sammy, but that was iconic. That post September 11th running out to right
field. Plus, that was his flair. I mean, that stays in character as to who he was. You like him, you don't like him. You know, he was, you know, certainly Cub Nation for 10 years. That cannot be denied, okay?
So we'll be there, Bruce, next week. What do you, is that number one on both of our lists, what you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I think the fans and Sosa and his family getting to share the love fest after 20 years. I mean, I say 20 years and I just, every time I say it, I freak.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
That the fact that this has been 2 decades. I'm so glad the wrong was righted on both sides. Whatever needed to be done is done, because it's going to be worth it at the Sheraton next week. It's going to be a goosebump moment. I really believe that. It's hard to get the goosebumps for us going, but that's going to be one of those memorable moments. A lot of people to thank here on the show. Ron Coomer joining us, White Sox manager Will Venable, our guy Robbie behind the glass, man. He's the best at doing it. He loves this show as much as I do. Bruce Levine. And Bruce, we got to get Bruce out of here because he's got to join Lawrence and his guy, Remy Martin. Today at 11:30 till 1 at Signature, an elevated restaurant and sports bar at 1312 South Wabash in Chicago. Come register for your chance to play hoops on the Court of Dreams at the United Center on February 22nd. Come sample some Remy cocktails. Remy Martin, team up for excellence. Bruce, always fun, my friend.
You know, the next time you can't do the show, I'm going to have this Remy Martin guy co-host with me.
Well, that's respect. He's been around for a couple centuries.
I think it'll probably be a lot of fun. People can follow me on Twitter, MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. The one, the only, Steve Rosenblum.
I can't wait. I know it. He's got some thoughts.
He's going to suck, so you don't have to. Next here on 670 to the Score, 670thescore.com.